Thank you, Frank. You know, it's good to be here. Let's go with 2 Corinthians 12, 8, 10. As the old song from New Orleans says, I am weak, but thou art strong. When Brother Britton called me, I knew that I had to come. And not only is he my fraternity brother, his father is my fraternity brother. You know, his father, the great basketball coach that won so many basketball games at Anderson High School. More importantly, his father's auntie lived next door to my grandmother in Louisiana. And it's good to be here. I think I was here some 20 plus years ago. I see lots of friends. Dennis Whaley, my golfing buddy, is here. He was one of the guests. The Reverend Freddie Dixon, my minister when I was at Western United Methodist Church, and we had so many intellectual debates. It's just good to be here to talk to you about commitment to Christ and the church. You know, as a kid growing up on the North Shore of New Orleans, and as a member of the Methodist Youth Fellowship, and I was on the National Council of the Methodist Youth Fellowship, commitment to Christ, Corinthians 2, was a great topic of discussion. The question is, how can you be so humble and strong at the same time? During the days of Christ, as we seek to interpret this book that's over 4,000 years old, it was a turbulent time for individuals and a turbulent time as Christianity evolved. It was about Romans, and the Romans believed that to kill, to maim, to be strong was the great value of the world. And if you look at whether it's Corinthians or other books of the Bible, you know that people are searching for and trying to understand and make sense of the world. And with the resurrection and the development of Christianity, as the Bible verse say, if my people who are just called by my name would humble themselves and pray. Because through me, we become your strength. One of the things that's interesting is that how do we get this message from generation to generation? Over thousands of years, a type of ideology, a type of religion that have come to dominate. Christ understood when he talked about the body of the church, it was not only the body of the church as we know it, but as it was the individuals wherever we go. But as things developed, we developed something called institutions called a church to make sure that the church is the embodiment of the words of Christ. It is an embodiment of the individuals who were trying to make things happen in such a difficult time. So churches themselves became the embodiment of the Christian word and also the embodiment of America. As a college professor and as one who was born in New Orleans and understand the importance of religion. Of course, I like to tell you a story. When I was in college, we played Notre Dame. And they had a coach called Errol Parseghian. And, of course, the Tigers, my alma mater, beat Notre Dame. And he was on his national television show. And he said, how was it taking that Catholic university to Louisiana? He said, well, we got off the bus. We heard all these people saying, go to hell, Notre Dame. And he looked around, and it was 25 nuns. The point of it is this. If you look at how the country developed, and if you look at how the ideology, it was embedded in the institutions. And the institutions themselves, as a university professor, was embedded in universities. Now, let me just say this. Go back to the earliest university, Harvard University. Oh, it's Presbyterian. Go back to Princeton University. It started at a Presbyterian seminar. I grew up Methodist. My sisters went to Dillon University. I went to LSU, went to Northwestern University. It's Methodist. All of the universities, Houston, Tillerson, Methodist. Whether you went to Bishop, whether you went to Baylor, whether you went to Notre Dame, which is Catholic, the University of Chicago is Baptist. What are the patterns that we're seeing here? The patterns that we're seeing here is that the early inception of the country was that we must somehow get the implementation of the biblical verses to guide the weak to strength. So what does it mean as universities fight? And what does it mean when we say we make a commitment? It is not just a commitment of this great structure and this great tradition of Ebenezer. It is what the church has done throughout the community. The fact that Metropolitan Church right down the street founded Paul Quinn College. The fact that the African Methodist Church founded over 35 colleges and universities. The fact that the Baptist Church founded over 50 colleges and universities. So we see a pattern here developing from family and church to our broad institutions. But on the other hand, as I have here in my notes, those broader institutions have also become more secular. It is a secularization of religion. It's a secularization of the institutions that provide one of the greatest challenges to the world and the greatest challenges to America. What do we mean by secularization of the institution as we commit and understand the commitment to Christ and understand that when we commit to Christ, we also commit to institutions and understand that those institutions carry on the value propositions to future generations. What it means is this. Go back to any organization. Go back to all of the great organizations, the religious organizations in America. And you see a competition between secular and religious. Well, you know, in my classes, I know that no matter what they are, they're praying, taking my examinations. So the question is, how do you separate the two? And how have we tried to separate the two? The separation is based on a kind of value system that must be understood and how to understand that system. I have some cases here in my notes for men of Ebenezer. And the first one is family. The whole idea that there in the larger society are many competing ideas. And like gravity moves things in physics, ideas move things when it comes to people. And let me tell you about my first case study, Peggy Dilworth Anderson, who went to graduate school with me at Northwestern. And Peggy called me on the phone one day. And she said, well, John, I had a very interesting thing to happen to my daughter. I said, well, what happened, Peggy? Well, she said, well, you know, I raised her in a good Christian home, and I taught her how to dress, but there are other influences in her life. Well, you know, Hampton is one of those old-time value things that probably have vests. Well, she showed up at Hampton with blue jeans on and holes in her blue jeans, and Hampton told her, you cannot go in this building. You cannot come in this building until you learn how to dress. You cannot come into this building until you learn that one of the things about Hampton is that it is a Christian school. And there are certain value propositions associated with a Christian school. And therefore, it becomes difficult to carry that message on to our kids. Now, the idea of being weak then, as I was talking to Professor Anderson, is the idea she is on her way to college, and weakness just simply means, as we would say in the business world, when you admit that you don't know anything, then you can really start. You see, in my field of endeavor, which is innovation and entrepreneurship and basically teaching people to be wealthy, it is based on the idea of understanding your weakness of what you don't know and moving to the things that you know. What that means then is, as I traveled across the world teaching, I was in Japan 14 summers teaching. And it was a different kind of philosophy. Because in Japan, in my classes, they would say, well, Dr. Butler, if I try an entrepreneurial venture and I fail, I lose face and I might commit suicide. But in America, that weakness is a strength. That weakness itself is a learning strength that has come from the discipline and the ideology of the early Christians. The whole idea that you can try something and fail, we said, well, there's no such thing as failure. It is a learning curve. This is where we get the whole idea from a second chance. From a second chance. So if you can have a second chance, then you begin to really, really understand how it's related to thou must be in us as we become strong. So therefore, all of the things that we talk about, as we commit and a continue to commitment, men of, we must think about ourselves, we must think about the church, and we must think about the community. One of the great things that's happening in the pattern as of innovation and entrepreneurship is the relationship between high religious ideals, high, and business success. So they asked me, Dr. Butler, Freddie Dixon, if we look at the immigrants, which we have looked at for years, and we have talked about this, why are the immigrants so broadly in new venture development? Because underneath that commitment is also a religious commitment. Can you be completely secular and be successful? Our biblical teaching tells us that to be strong, we must be strong in Christ, because our strength will come from Christ. So this is why is it important to talk about what people are doing. I have a book here. My next case is from a Reverend DeForest Blake Sarees, one of my great friends from Minnesota. And this book says to, I have a book for you, Dr. Dixon. Wow, I brought the wrong one. And the name of Buster, as we call him, Buster, has been a friend for 30 years. It says that true freedom comes from serving community and God and doing away with weakness. Let me tell you about Buster. Buster is a minister of a church in New Jersey. We've been working together for some 35 or 40 years. And by the way, this book skyrocketed to the bestseller on Amazon, which we're proud of. I have two chapters in the book myself. And Buster called me and said, John, we're going to go back to Corinthians in my community because the community is weak. Buster organized the entire church. They bought the entire community that was falling into decay around them. They bought all the public housing. They got rid of all of the debt. I mean, Buster used to say, you know, I'm going to tell you this, Buster. Credit card is just high-tech sharecropping. How do you get away from high-tech sharecropping? For those of you who don't understand what sharecropping is, now I must admit, they said, Dr. Butler, have you ever picked any cotton? I said, well, I opened an aspirin bottle one time and pulled a cotton out. What is high-tech sharecropping? What did Buster do? He got the church together. He said, John, what I did, first of all, we got all rid of the debt. The individual debt. And then we turn that energy into a enterprise that purchased everything that was around us. And now we look like, quote, an upper middle class community. One of his quotations in the book, he said, my grandmother left property to myself and her grandchildren. And the way my generation is going, we're not going to leave them one thing. But the strength of the community, the strength of Buster, came from the commitment to God. The strength of Buster said, look, we are weak now, but if we just humble ourselves, we can be strong. My last case has to do with what we all go through, death. You know, sometimes, you know, I go to my doctor and say, oh, the doctor said, oh, you know, Dr. Butler, you look good, your numbers are good. I said, wait, doc, you know, dying runs in my family. Mama died, daddy died. My mother, Freddie Dixon worked with my mother, who had my name, Johnny Mae Sibley Butler. She was, died at 103, was still having Super Bowl parties and hosting her Zeta fraternity parties, sorority parties. And they would say, Doctor, do you know Dr. Butler? He's a mess. And Freddie said, you shouldn't meet his mama. I have a little saying here, and it goes like this. Death and weakness, and all things being sorrow. I said, God, I hurt. God said, I know. God, I am so depressed and weak at times. He said, that's why I gave you sunshine. I said, God, my loved one died. God said, so did mine. Oh, God, mine was such a loss. He said, they nailed mine to a cross. He said, I know, did I not make you a covenant, that seal? I will not forsake you. You're not alone. I am all around you. My glory is revealed. My love surrounds you. I know. I said, but God, your loved one lives. God said, so does yours. I asked him where they are tonight. He said, be at peace. They're in my life. He said, I know. Did I not make you a covenant, that seal, and I'll not forsake you. You're not alone. I'm all around you. My glory is revealed. My love surrounds you. I know. And I said, God, I hurt. And God said, my child, I know. Seek your strength in me. So as we go about life, and as we think about things, if we try to understand where we are in life, we go back to the scriptures. That's 4,000 years old, and just try to understand what people were going through. And that people created a religion that's been passed for thousands and thousands of years that will allow us to understand that when we believe and when we are weak, we are strong through God. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Butler, for reminding us that many of the educational institutions in our country began as religious movements and efforts to uplift persons and to uplift communities, and that they were not just thinking about being strong, but how do you move from being weak to strong? Education. And then for challenging us through his case about Pastor Soares and what the work he's doing on the East Coast, that the calling of the church is to move persons from a place of weakness to a place of strength. And that calling sometimes includes economic development and empowerment. And thank you for reminding us that at the root of it all is Jesus Christ, that we are strong in Christ. And even when we are struggling and going through difficulties like death, the grace of God gives us strength. It is that Christ we offer to you now as we extend the invitation to Christ. Will you stand with me? This choir sings, "Walk with Me." Join them, and we extend the invitation to faith in Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Dr. Butler, for a very inspiring message. We certainly appreciate you being here with us this morning. Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to thank Pastor Freeman, Ebenezer members, and friends for allowing me the opportunity to serve as the chairman of this year's Men's Day Observance. I might add that Pastor Freeman asked me one time would I do it. I told him, no, I've done it before. And he said, well, in the last 10 years. I said, that's not what you asked. You asked me, have I done it before? So knowing pastors as they are, I made preparations for later on. And I said, well, Larry, you know that he may call again and ask you to do this. So I said, well, I'll pray over it and see what he come up with. So then when he did call the second time, he said, well, Larry, you up. I said, okay, Pastor, I'll do it. It's not a problem. So he said, it's all yours. What an exciting second Sunday reopening for in-person service. This has been a very, very wonderful experience for me. I'm not going to be long. I promise you that. I want to thank the members of the Men's Day Steering Committee, my co-chair, Deacon Ronnie Washington. And Deacon Washington, if you want to come up, because I want you to have a few words, too, after I have concluded. My committee chairman, Deacon Melvin Wren, Deacon Oliver Street, Dr. Leroy Davis, and the men's ensemble, y'all did a fantastic job. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Brother Glenn Carson, Brother Bert Ellison, Deacon Anthony Dennis, And as always, we always have to thank Sister Beatrice Williams for helping us out with the flowers and everything, as she always does that. So we are very grateful for her. She never turns us down. I especially want to give express my sincere appreciation to Deacon Anthony Dennis for his leadership, for our prayer service, and for also sharing a video series with the Brotherhood by Dr. Tony Evans, which was entitled "No More Excuses," and it was an eye opener. And I hope it got the attention to those who did view them, so that we may able to redirect and rededicate ourselves to the Christian principles by acknowledging that God has the recipe of life, that He is in control, and we are dependent on God, not independent of Him. I also want to thank the media team, Reverend Spears, you and Kanika Pendergrass, for you all's assistance. And let me not forget the team captains and co-captains. Thank you for your continued dedication and hard work. And for you, the members, thank you for your continued spiritual and financial support of our Men's Day observance. Thank you very much.